All right, what's up, and welcome back for another episode of Cognizant and Cognizance, the podcast born out of recognizing the importance of the second stage of the mastery process, conscious incompetence. This is your host, Jim Perro, speaking, and every week I add a new chapter onto the anthological discussion on life, taking action, and the value of conscious thought. Join me and the occasional guest for a head-in-the-clouds perspective on how to stay grounded and win in all that you do. Enjoy! All right, so let's get right into it here. I'm going to go with my typical 10 cents for thought as per usual. And so, first cent for thought. Am I a little bit better today than I was yesterday? Yeah, I suppose so. I'm not really sure about that one, to be perfectly honest. I guess I'm not worse than I was yesterday, so that's good. Question two, have I built my character? And yeah, again, I'm definitely not worse than I was yesterday. Kind of just trying to build on the habit of not being a piece of shit, which is good. Try to stay humble. Don't be a liar. You know, try to do that as much as possible. And question three, did I give my best at work? I certainly did in the last week. Yesterday, sure. Today, yeah, definitely. I'd say today I did for sure. But it just, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to not slack sometimes because I don't really care about my job. So, oh, that's so bad to say. But here we are. And sorry if anyone from my office is listening, which I'm sure you are. Great. Question four, what did I learn new today? I learned two new things. I put a Twitter poll up yesterday, and today I learned the results. And if you go check my Twitter sometime in the next couple hours, you'll be able to see kind of a little analysis that I did of like a quantitative and qualitative analysis, just something really brief, and it's obviously not necessarily 100% strict to the scientific method, but just kind of some conclusions that I drew and a breakdown of the results. But in any case, I learned, and again, you'll go see the results, I'm sure, on my Twitter, and I put a hypothetical scenario about a genie and four paths, each to a different aspect of what I call existential fitness. So you got your financial fitness, you got your emotional fitness, and you got your physical fitness. So I put four paths up there. Depending on which path you take, the idea being that that gives some information about who you are, what you value, or what you place your importance on in terms of financial, emotional, or physical fitness. And it also gives a little bit of a story about what you feel that you're lacking in your life currently. Better financial, better emotional, or better physical fitness than we have. So I learned that 42% of those people who responded, which wasn't a shit ton, it was probably like 10 or 20% of my follower list, but they valued physical fitness more than all the other types. And I also learned that the SATs are going to be instituting something called an adversity score. Well, a college board that runs the SATs is going to be instituting something called an adversity score, which is designed to take into account the socioeconomic background of the applicant or the test taker, which is interesting. Sounds like it could be a little problematic, but I haven't done the research, so I don't know if it's a good or bad thing yet. The intent's probably good, maybe, but I don't know exactly what it's going to do and if it's actually going to happen. So anyway, two new things that I learned today. Question six, have I protected my planet? Just, again, try not to be a piece of shit. Turn the water off, turn the lights off. Keep the door shut when the AC's on, all that good stuff. I do my best at that. Question seven, have I expressed love for my family and friends? I mean, yeah, I have. Went to the Lilac Festival on Mother's Day for a little while with my brother and my dad, so that was fun. It was kind of rainy and kind of crappy, but we got to hang out, so that was good. Have I spent quality time with my spouse? Nope, she's not around here. Gonna be apart for the summer, which kind of sucks, but you know, it is what it is. Can't have everything, you know, can't have the whole world. Sometimes little pieces of it get away from you. Anyway, so do I bear any grudges against anyone? Just the one that I talked about last week that I'm not going to talk about. But it's not really that deep anyway. It's just, it is what it is. Question 10, the final one, kind of breeze through this right here, but am I content with my life? And the ever important and simultaneously least important question, happy with what I got, not happy with where I am, happy with where I'm headed, not happy with where I have landed so far on my path. And so there you have it, real quick, simple and easy, my 10 cents for thought. And so now let's get into the usual flow of things that comes after that, which of course, excuse me, first thing, and sorry that I keep sniffing, got allergies really bad, something that really just kind of popped up in my life towards the end of summer last year. I started to get allergies really bad, and I never really had them before, and then this year they just sat right the hell in right as soon as May hit, essentially, which kind of sucks, but what are you gonna do? Anyway, so today, May 16th, 2019, and the entry for today is about the chain method, which I'll get to that in a minute, and trust me when I say this, you're not going to think that what I'm talking about today is going to have anything to do with the chain method until right at the very end, and I promise that it will. So, the chain method. The entry begins with a passage from Epictetus's Discourses that goes like this. If you don't wish to be a hothead, don't feed your habit. Try as a first step to remain calm and count the days you haven't been angry. I used to be angry every day, now every other day, then every third or fourth, and if you make it as far as 30 days, thank God. For habit is first weakened and then obliterated. When you can say, I didn't lose my temper today, or the next day, or for 3 or 4 months, but kept my cool under provocation, you will know you are in better health. And so Hanselman and Holliday go on to say this. The comedian Jerry Seinfeld once gave a comic named Brad Isaacs some advice about how to write and create material. Keep a calendar, he told him, and each day that you write jokes, put an X. Soon enough, you'll get a chain going, and then your job is to simply not break the chain. Success becomes a matter of momentum. Once you get a little, it's easier to keep going. Whereas Seinfeld used the chain method to build a positive habit, Epictetus was saying that it can also be used to eliminate a negative one. It's not all that different than taking sobriety one day at a time. Start with one day doing whatever it is, be it managing your temper or wandering eyes or procrastination.
Excuse me.
Sorry about that. Then do the same the following day and the day after that. Build a chain and then work not to break it. Don't ruin your streak. Great. Awesome. Super important. And today, that's part of why the chain method is the title here. It's because obviously the chain method is important if you want to, you know, stick with the theme of May, which is right action. And so today, I want to talk to you a little bit about another Joe Rogan Experience episode that I watched this week. Surprise, surprise. What a shocker, right? So this week, Joe had on Jamie Metzl, who was the former executive vice president of the... Asia Society. There it is.
And...
he also is on the Atlantic Council, which I don't know exactly what the Atlantic Council is. But in any case, this guy is great. He's a technology futurist. He's like a geopolitical expert. And so he talked a lot about China, a lot about North Korea, a lot about the work that he's done to kind of hammer out different economic challenges with them to get both of those countries integrated into the global market economy, which is really important. And so after they were kind of going through that, they talked a lot about One area that China is really starting to win, or at least compete, if not outright win, against the U.S., and that is human genetic modification, which is absolutely terrifying, if you ask me. And so they kind of talked a little bit about the difference between eugenics and genetic modification, which is a really important distinction. I think people who aren't necessarily well informed on the issue are going to immediately just, oh, this is eugenics, this is ridiculous, this is all pseudoscience garbage. And I mean, at the end of the day, eugenics was a sound, scientifically backed theory that was polluted by gross ideologies like Nazism, and people just, it has a gross connotation. It's just not, it's not an okay thing to talk about. It's far outside the Overton window. In any case, eugenics, quick definition for those who don't know, it's essentially a scientifically based and theoretical practice of breeding out traits or sub-traits that are seen as inferior in subsections of the human species. And so this is like, these are things like, you know, shortness, baldness. And the idea was that you can breed those traits out by mixing different geno and phenotypes from different animals and humans. And so this theory, as you may have guessed, was immediately taken up by the Nazis and social Darwinists and racists and scumbags all over the place, thinking that, oh, we can just breed the minorities out. Fucking losers. And so where human genetic modification in the current form is different is the way that it's being used and the primary usage for it. Now, the way that human genetic modification is being studied in its current form, or the way it's being practiced, I should say, in its current form, is manipulating epigenetic structures. And so epigenetic structures are essentially, the way I understand it, kind of like the outer layer on a gene. So you have your genes, let's compare it to a house for a second. You have the foundation of your house, or the foundation of your body rather, which is the gene, the DNA that's all encoded and wrapped up together. Then you have an epigene, which sits on top of that, which is like the, you know, the siding that's put around the house, and the paint, and the different kinds and colors of paint, and windows, and styles of homes, and everything. It all is built on the same thing, which is your DNA, which is the foundation. And so the idea is you manipulate the epigenetic structures to improve phenotype selection within babies. And the phenotype is the part of the gene that actually displays. So like the phenotype for red hair or brittle fingernails or tall or short or whatever the hell it is, the part of your body that actually is expressed physically into the world is your phenotype. Sorry. And so the idea is to expand on what we're already doing now on a very low level, because right now, there, if you have enough money, you can actually choose certain low-level characteristics of your baby. And so the idea is to rapidly enhance that technology so that it is, if not commercially available, at least widely available for medical cases. And they're doing that pretty effectively now. Right now, as it sits, that process is about 1.25 million times cheaper today than it was in the early 2000s. Excuse me, hiccup. In the early 2000s. And so, what this guy Jamie Metzl was saying is that it could conceivably be medically, and then ultimately after that, commercially available and affordable, just like 23andMe or Ancestry.com. Those kinds of services. And he was predicting this in the next 10 to maybe 15 years, it'll be available. And so if that scares you, good, it should. It scares the shit out of me, to be perfectly frank. And there's a couple reasons why. The primary reason is the basis for, they go over two scenarios in this. They go over one dystopian and one utopian scenario. So Joe Rogan kind of brings up and actually starts to dwell on the dystopian scenario in this situation. And he's kind of basing it off of his assessment of the current global and even on a smaller scale, US-based dynamic and cultural climate. and the way he's seeing it, kind of from a cynical point of view, is that it would be very easy in the current global climate for the people that are perceived to be at the top to get a hold of this new human genome modification technology first, and then just widen all the gaps between people they perceive to be below them. Widen the gap between the healthy and the unhealthy, widen economic disparity, make racial equality basically a non-existent thing, you know, like widen the racial equality gap, so on and so forth, you know, separate biological differences between men and women, whatever you want to do, whatever way you want to take it, the idea would be in the worst possible scenario that the people who get their hands on the technology first can do whatever they want with it and make life worse. And so Metzl, he's being ever an optimist, of course, he counters, he acknowledges, because obviously, yeah, that you can't deny that that's an exact possibility based on the way that we think now. And so Metzl's argument is the utopian scenario in which, that's just not the way that it happens. And so his point of view was through revising the modern thought process in the sense of, you know, removing the tribalist attitudes that so many people are, you know, my team against all other teams, men versus women, black versus all the other, or black versus white, you know, rich versus poor, whatever it is, by removing the tribalist attitude, which, in my opinion, he didn't say this, this is just my assessment of people that engage in tribalistic politics and other associations. It's really just a societal and physical manifestation of the imaginary divisions that we put around ourselves to separate us from pain and suffering, and we use it to reinforce our ego and all of those terrible things that really aren't healthy or productive for anyone involved. But anyway, so his point was break down that tribalism by revising the way that we think and take this technology, be the first to get there, sure, on the globe as kind of a deterrent, kind of like a mutually assured destruction kind of deterrent, which is a little dark. But the idea would be that now we have control of the market and we can use this technology to better the people that are most disadvantaged in the world. You know, rising tide lifts all boats. I don't remember who the fuck said that, but somebody said it. And the idea being, you know, elevate the people on the quote unquote bottom and elevate them to even just to elevate them all to the average levels, you know, like the average human level on the planet in terms of health, economic prosperity, equality between race and gender, all those good things, to be able to erase some of those seemingly innate disadvantages based on location and population would be an amazing thing. We'd be able to eradicate a lot of suffering through this potentially disastrous technology if we just get a handle on it. We'd be able to provide genetic resistance to diseases for people in third world countries and less fortunate in first world countries. We could maybe someday even cure things like AIDS and cancer by manipulating out the genes that are most likely to mutate in humans. All that kind of shit. And that's important because those things disproportionately affect the poorest humans on the planet. They don't really talk about this necessarily in there, but I had a thought that we could even perfect genetically modifying foods once we perfect it in humans, because the human genome is so much more complex than, say, corn or wheat or whatever other crop that you want to manipulate. And we could perfect that process because personally, the way we do it now, I don't think it's necessarily safe. We haven't studied it enough. And it doesn't actually even really work the way that we would like it to work or as well as we would like it to work. So if we could now control the effects that that has on the population by perfecting the genetically modified food process, fine by me. That would be amazing. And so, again, like I said, I promise that this will relate to the chain method and right action. I absolutely promise. And here's how it does. So as they're talking about this, it kind of dawns on me, and as I'm sure it's dawned on you as well, that the differences between the dystopian and the utopian future are, it really only boils down to one thing, and this is actually truly the only one thing that they're talking about in the end of the day, whether they know it or not. They're talking about right action. And what did I talk about last week? Right, reorienting your thought process to correct your path and make sure that you're moving in the right direction. Carpe the fucking diem, right? And so we see this now, we see this opportunity, we see the day is dawning soon enough when we can effectively start to really work on some of these bigger, incredible problems that seem insurmountable. But at the end of the day, wouldn't that be great? Obviously, I'm oversimplifying here, but if we could just flip a couple switches and a couple genes around the world and teach other people how to do it and get rid of some of these things that really plague society. And at the end of the day, what we'll do by reorienting our thought process is avoid that dystopian future that Rogan was dwelling on, and we preserve at least the opportunity to create something close to a utopia without disease and without hunger and without a lot of other crazy things. And so for me, I mean, that if that's pretty obvious, you know, you have two decision paths there. You have one path that leads down to, you know, personally, not my goal, which is to have a shitty world that's even more stratified than it already is, or even more deeply stratified. I suppose there'd only be two strata at that point, the haves and the have-nots, which is what the fucking communists want. I'm out. But anyway, at the end of the day, you have a decision to make. And every decision you make has two potential outcomes. It has the dystopian and the utopian. Or if you want to boil that down to a more personable and relatable level, which I personally do, I'd go crazy if I just spent all day thinking about something as esoteric as whether or not we can edit out poverty through changing people's genes. But at the end of the day, let's make this more personal for you and for me. When you have a decision to make, it either serves your purpose and it serves your goal, or it doesn't. It either brings you towards that goal or it takes you away from that goal. And your goal could be something as esoteric as, you know, colonize Mars and save the human race or revolutionize the way people work and live with AI. Or it could be as simple as I want to lose 10 pounds in the next 6 months, or even better, I want to share more with my partner and kind of connect with them more. And at the end of the day, if your actions don't serve your goal and they don't serve the purpose that you've defined for yourself, that you want to go out and achieve and you want to live, you ain't getting there, Jack. It ain't fucking happening. It's just not going to happen. And so let's tie that into the chain method here. This is where the chain method really starts to become super useful, both on a personal level and on a kind of like a global decision-making level. This is so widely applicable. It's crazy. And so try making a habit out of your decision making. Like I said, track every day you make a decision that serves a goal or that serves your overall purpose. Maybe you make multiple decisions that serve multiple goals in that day. But when you start with just one, sooner or later you start to build that momentum that both Epictetus and Jerry Seinfeld were talking about. Mark, get a real literal calendar on your wall and a bulletin board in your phone. Mark those days off when you make a good decision that benefits a goal, when you do something beneficial for yourself, and just focus on not breaking that streak. Don't break that streak, and before you know it, not only will you be able to count the number of goals you've achieved, but you'll be able to count the number of beneficial decisions you make every day instead of just the days in a row that you're making a good decision. And, you know, I think that's something to note. You, if you're a politician and you're listening to this, fucking take note of that. Somebody that's trying to fix their life, take note of that. Somebody that's just trying to, you know, just trying to get something done, whatever it is. Start a business, lose some weight, find a girlfriend, find a boyfriend, find a friend in period. Like, whatever you need to do, use this information however you will. But my recommendation is to you to go forth and prosper with that information. And so with that, I will leave you for another episode. Sorry that I was a little late here. I wanted to get this posted about 40 minutes ago, but I recorded the entire first time, well, like probably about 10 minutes of the first time, without my mic turned on. So technical difficulties remedied. Here we are. And that's an episode. Have a good one. See you next week.